America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Welcome to Wiggins America. We're going to get to Iran. We're going to get to gerrymandering. Seems like those have been the two stories that have been in the news the longest right now, and they continue to be headline makers. So we're going to get to that. But there is a story that I want to bring back up first. And again, this is one that has been in the headlines for, I guess this is now 2 weeks now. I think this is right. Maybe it's 3 weeks. I have to look back at the timetable. I get a little lost at times because the news moves very fast. And that's my point in bringing this up, is that the news moves too fast at times to remember what's really going on. I mentioned this story last week. So if you're like, Ryan, you already did this. Well, keep in mind, there's a larger point here. And I still think it's that important to keep this in the news. The third Trump assassin, or potential assassin. We're not talking about this story a whole lot right now, and that's because there's other things happening. There's not like a lot of developments in it. But have you seen the story about the judge? Now, if you have, I'm going to go back over it. So I'm going to go into it a little bit deeper maybe than you just heard like a mention of it. But it's a surprising story because when we do things like we read the Babylon Bee satire stories, we on the right will sort of make fun of how ridiculous some of the leftists are. And a lot of times that's just influencers and that's Antifa and that's like crowdsourced kooky left. They're singing songs and they're doing this dumb stuff. They hate Doge. You know, you're like, get over. Come on, dude. But this isn't just some kooky progressive who's dyed their hair and is going out and marching in the streets. This is a magistrate judge. Judge Zia Faruqi in D.C. is over the case of Cole Thomas Allen, the would-be assassin of not just President Trump, we keep saying Trump, but really in his manifesto, he said he would kill everybody he could. And in fact, I'll read it again just in case you don't remember. He says, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. While I'm discussing this, I also go over my expected rules of engagement. Administration officials, they are targets, prioritized from highest ranking to lowest. He was going to kill as many people as he possibly could in the administration. Secret Service, they are targets only if necessary and to be incapacitated non-lethally if possible. Hotel security, not targets if at all possible unless they shoot at me. He will kill them too. Capitol Police, same as hotel security. National Guard, same as hotel security. Hotel employees, not targets. Guests, not targets. But he then goes on to say in his manifesto, this assassin, in order to minimize casualties, I will also be using buckshot rather than slugs, but I will still go through most everyone here to get through to the targets if it were absolutely necessary. But I really hope that it doesn't come to that. On the basis, going backwards here because he wrote this in all in one paragraph, on the basis that most people chose to attend a speech by a pedophile, rapist, and traitor and are thus complicit. So he's saying, look, I'm not trying to kill innocent people here. Although really you could make a case that everybody's either innocent or not innocent, biblically speaking. But he was willing to kill anybody to kill the president of the United States. Anybody. And he said so. And he did so because he had been completely radicalized and was in a bubble and did not know anything outside of what the far, far left was telling him. Now, the point of my segment here is not to talk about Cole Thomas Allen and the assassination attempt. My point is bringing up, this guy's crazy. He was willing to murder anybody so that he could murder one person and really take out as many people as possible. And he stated that. He said it in his manifesto that he sent to his own family to explain himself. Then he goes before a judge after he's captured and had accomplished none of these things, but almost did. And the judge said this: Cole Thomas Allen's confinement is, quote, disturbing. The fact that he was confined, I guess, was disturbing. But here's the specifics of his confinement. He had been, and this is his defense saying this, unnecessarily confined in a padded room. So the walls were not hard, they were soft. In that room, there was constant lighting. So it was lit, it wasn't dark, but they didn't change it to reflect night and day. Repeatedly strip searched. I guess he was, you know, they wanted to make sure he didn't have any weapons on him. And placed in restraints. That is the cruel and unusual punishment that the defense said he was under. Now, you'd expect defense to do that kind of stuff. That's what they do all the time. But the U.S. Magistrate Judge Zia Faruqi said that those conditions were disturbing. He didn't just stop there, though. He said, quote, it could drive a person crazy to be in that situation. Oh, because we're trying to preserve his sanity. He was already saying this would make him crazy, is what the judge is saying. Faruqi then apologized directly to the assassin over his confinement conditions, saying, quote, I am very troubled by what they indicate the conditions that you have been subjected to. I'm sorry, it sounds like things have not been the way they're supposed to. Whatever you've been through, I apologize. That is the judge in this case. This person is in charge of judging fairly this case of the assassin, potential assassin, of the President of the United States and untold amounts of other, you know, bystanders that he would go through to get there, administration officials. He did shoot a Secret Service agent, but he hit him right in the chest and he was wearing armor, so he was okay. This is not a sane person. And no, I'm not even talking about the assassin. I'm talking about the judge. The bigger point I'm trying to make here is this. When we talk about Iran, we talk about China, especially Russia, we're talking about foreign policy, we're talking about outside threats to the country. They're real threats. They're things that really could hurt us in the long run if we don't pay attention to them. But I don't think that any of them are as dangerous as what we're facing from within. And I'm going to define that. What is the problem from within that could take America down more than really any other problem? The one problem. It's that we don't know the difference. Not all of us, anyway. We don't know the difference between right and wrong. We don't have an objective right and wrong. And when it gets, when your compass gets so out of whack and it's just swirling, and then you get into a position of power, you can inflict real damage. You could just let this guy go. I'm just playing this out. Let's say the judge somehow gets this guy off of all the charges. That won't happen because they'll appeal it higher. But he's in a position of power, and there are lots of judges doing this kind of stuff, where they will undercut the administration that was voted on by the people of the United States. Now, if you're on the left, you say, well, they're actually just putting a check on them. Well, listen to this judge. I give you this as a case example. Does this judge sound like he knows what he's doing? In a sense, you could say he kind of does. Like, this is so backward and almost evil that you'd think, actually, he does know what he's doing. He's just that evil. I don't even know, though. I think what we have is a crisis of morality in this country where people don't know the difference between right and wrong. I mean, basic. And yes, it starts with your crazies on the internet posting goofy socials of themselves talking about how their nutty beliefs. But then those people get radicalized and they go into the streets and they cause chaos and they cause damage and they cause you know, almost civil wars in little pockets. And then those people become assassins and they try to shoot the president. And if they don't get radicalized in that way, they don't know the difference between right and wrong. They get into positions of power in the United States and they help those people. This is the crisis that we're facing as a nation. And I just bring that back up, not to highlight the assassin so much, but the fact that crazy people exist in positions of power, too, in the United States. And that is a huge problem. We're going to take a short break. Like I said, we are going to talk about Iran. We're going to talk about gerrymandering. There's news on both fronts, of course, and we will get to it here on Wiggins America.
Wiggins America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
I'm concerned with the morals being portrayed to our children through the Harry Potter books. Like that you can dabble in being British, but with none of the consequences.
The Grocery List, food for thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Your cool friend listens to it. Wiggins America.
Okay, first things first on Iran. Everybody's saying that we're getting played by Iran now, partially because of the gas prices. Now, I will say that I think that they have used that to their advantage for sure. I mean, that's kind of the only leverage they have over a prolonged war, because America doesn't care. I mean, if you were paying the same amount in gas as you were before this thing started, would you care at all what we were doing in Iran long term? I think that we would, but we definitely would not have, it wouldn't be the headline. Like we would be maybe talking about it a little bit, but not like this, especially the way that this negotiation's going. So in that sense, they're using that leverage very well. And you got to say that. You got to acknowledge that. But the other way in which people are saying, well, they're winning, you know, mainstream media, I guess you could say, is saying Iran's beating us here, is that they are prolonging negotiations. They really have no intention of coming to any sort of agreement with us. They're just going to drag this thing out as long as possible, is some of the narrative that's being said, not just in mainstream, but in other voices as well. I would say some conservatives are saying that too. And there is truth to that. It's not just that it's sort of a talking point. They probably are dragging this thing out. The problem is, like I said last week, is you have to sort of, especially with foreign policy things, it's not just a red-blue issue. You have to look at this from all angles. And the other angle to look at that is that, yes, they're dragging out negotiations, and they probably would forever if they could, but in this circumstance, they can't. We have successfully blockaded them and isolated them almost completely. So they're not making any money. The government's going bankrupt, and obviously the government leaders keep dying because we've killed so many of them. So they don't really have a lot more to play. They don't have a lot more cards to play here. So the dragging it out thing, does it really benefit them? Well, only if they are a nihilist, if they are full dead end. We do not care what happens to our country. We don't care about anything in the future. We're just going to run full force head first into a brick wall, which they might. I mean, they're crazy. So they might actually do that, but they have nothing to gain by prolonging this at this point. That's the only point that I think needs to be said that's not being said about the Iran war. All right, we're going to hit a couple different things here.
Wow, Wiggins America.
Good news, 4.3 million Americans have been taken off of SNAP food stamps in the last few months. Secretary of Commerce, no, Agriculture Secretary, Brooke Rollins, has a quote here. I'm going to read it. And this story, if you look it up at all, because a lot of it's, this isn't really making a lot of news. But if you look it up, all the headlines are negative. and they read like this, like there's a Yahoo one that says something about Brooke Rollins, the United States kicks 4.3 million people off of food stamps. Probably the first sentence in it is so that they can starve, something like that. But here's the quote from Brooke Rollins. It says, as of just a couple days ago, we have now moved 4.3 million Americans off of the food stamp program. A lot of that is fraud. A lot of it is people taking the program that shouldn't have been. And a lot of it is just a better economy. We've had wage growth that has outpaced inflation for the first time since early 2021. This is a really big day, so people don't need food stamps. I think that she's probably right in assessing this. Now, if you're going to hear the best version of this from the administration, that's always true. But I think that she's probably accurate in saying wage growth really is the key right now because inflation will not stop. Inflation is low, but it has not stopped since Trump took over. And in fact, he never said that it would. He just said he wanted to bring costs down, which he hasn't done. And I guess technically that would be deflation, but that's not happening. And so they're focused, if you listen to Scott Bessent, for instance, they're focused on wage growth. And that is happening, and it is outpacing inflation overall. It's just not sexy. There's nothing that you can really shine a big light on and go, hey, look, we just gave everybody $5,000 or something like that. In fact, the jobs numbers never look good because they're getting rid of so many government employees that, and they're now counted in those numbers. They used to not be. That now it looks bad for the jobs numbers when, in fact, they're actually adding tons of private sector jobs every month. So anyway, the economic situation in the United States is surprisingly good. The gas prices that we just mentioned are horrendous, and that has to end soon. But overall, things are trending in the right direction, and a lot of people probably have left food stamps because their wages have gone up, and that would make them ineligible. The other thing that she says here is that there's been a lot of fraud and a lot of people taking the program that just shouldn't have been. Well, that kind of is all one category, isn't it? So there's outright fraud, like you're saying you're somebody else and you're getting food stamps. Or there's you kind of claiming your benefits erroneously, saying, oh, I made this much, and you know, or staying on the program too long. That's all part of this, too. And a lot of people do that. The reason that I bring this up is because, A, it's good news, and B, you can never trust the mainstream media. I'm reading this from an article called like the Bakersfield Institute, which does fact checks. And you're not going to believe this, but the fact checkers have an agenda. I know, right? It says in this Bakersfield article, the data says fraud is low. So they're challenging Brooke Rollins here and saying that fraud within the SNAP program is small, according to experts. Not nearly enough to account for such a significant drop. And they refer back to, I kid you not, 2023. They say, well, the latest data that's available is from 2023. And that year, only 41,476 people were disqualified from SNAP because of fraud. Yeah, that's the freaking point. That there haven't been enough people disqualified from it who don't qualify for it. And a lot of people stay on it for too long. And now she's saying, we're coming in and cleaning that up. The fact checkers know this, but they want to give you some sort of out if you're on the left for this being a bad thing. Like people working and making money and buying food for themselves. Apparently, according to the left, and literally almost every headline you'll find about this story, that's a bad thing. Amazing, isn't it? But that's the philosophy that we live under if you are a Democrat, is that making money and doing things for yourself is bad. You want to do things that the government approves of. And in fact, the government should be your daddy and be your God and provide for all of your needs. Never mind that that would be short-lived, because it can't go on forever. And we're dealing with the ramifications of that right now. Trump administration going in and cleaning this up. That's great news. That's great stuff that's happening behind the scenes that I don't think gets enough attention. Stick around. This is Wiggins America.
Hey. And then last year, they filed for bankruptcy a second time. They were bleeding money. They were bleeding market share. It would have made JetBlue stronger. You would have had one stronger airline as opposed to one airline going out of business. And so the story was written years ago.
Seems like a pretty cut and dry story. They were not making enough money and they've gone out of business. We're talking about Spirit Airlines. This was big news of the weekend, especially if you're in airports. Probably saw some people just standing there going, what am I going to do now? Because they just shut it down. Madison Scarpino is here, Fox News national correspondent, to give us the lowdown of what happened this weekend. Madison, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
So give us just the broad overview of what has happened to Spirit Airlines.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, you heard Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy earlier, the sound that you guys just played. He had said that, you know, obviously Spirit has been suffering financially for a while, but right now he is pointing towards the proposed merger that the Biden administration blocked back in 2024. And he's saying basically from there, things just started to go downhill, which eventually brought Spirit Airlines to what happened on Saturday when they abruptly, around 3 a.m., announced that the airline is shutting down. All flights are canceled. And now we know about 17,000 people who worked for Spirit are without a job.
So, Madison, why wouldn't the Biden administration allow a merger to happen? What was their rationale for doing so?
So they wanted to essentially keep the competition going and just be fair to all airlines. Senator Elizabeth Warren also praised that back in the day. And now with Secretary Sean Duffy sort of blaming the Biden administration for Spirit's downfall, she's coming back and saying, no, no, no. The judge who ultimately blocked this proposed merger between JetBlue and Spirit Airlines was a Ronald Reagan appointed judge. And then she is pointing towards the rising fuel prices with the war in Iran. But yeah, that is something that both Airlines for America President Chris Sununu and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy are pointing towards is the Biden administration blocking that proposed merger.
I'm glad you mentioned the Elizabeth Warren tweet because she said several things, but I actually printed out her tweet. I didn't know if we'd get to it, but now that you've mentioned it, it says this. This is Elizabeth Warren saying this in 2024, I believe, maybe a little bit before that. She says, I've warned for months that a JetBlue Spirit Airlines merger would have led to fewer flights and higher fares. Justice, ATR, and U.S. Department of Transportation were right to stand up for consumers and fight against runaway airline consolidation. This is a Biden win for flyers. I'm not sure how she spins her way out of saying that at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's controversial because we don't know ultimately if there is one thing to pinpoint to what caused Spirit to shut down. It could be a mix between the proposed merger being shut down. Also, like I mentioned, a lot of Democrats pointing towards fuel prices with the war in Iran, but Secretary Duffy will really push back on that and say, no, no, no. Financial problems have been going on for years now. They filed for bankruptcy twice. President Trump was trying to step in and potentially save the airline with a bailout, but that deal ultimately failed. And after that, there really was no hope for the airline to stay in the air.
Madison, we see companies frequently declare bankruptcy, and they're not actually done operating. You know, I guess it's Chapter 7 versus Chapter 11, different types of bankruptcy. But is there any hope that Spirit Airlines could still be bought by somebody like JetBlue? Or I saw that Frontier Airlines had looked into it as well in 22. Is it just that, no, now that this has happened, that airline is completely worthless?
From everything that I've gathered, everything that we are hearing from the airline itself, the CEO, Trump officials, just other congressmen, senators, it seems as though Spirit Airlines is going to be no more. I haven't heard about any hope for a potential buyout and any reverse of the course that they have already gone.
Madison Scarpino, last question for you. As we move along here, if this is a story that where you fly a lot, you know, obviously this would affect you. But if you're, you know, not somebody who takes a lot of trips, is this a major news story in America? Is it just because it's such a big business story?
I think it's a big deal. I mean, a lot of people do fly Spirit. This is really the go-to airline for people who maybe can't afford to take one of the other airlines. It's been a low-budget airline. It's been popular for that. And I think that the reason it's such a big story is this is the first airline to shut down in about 25 years. I believe, you know, everyone knows what Spirit Airlines is. And again, I think that those 17,000 people who worked for Spirit now being without a job, you know, Transportation Secretary Duffy is saying that other airlines are going to maybe give their applications some. They basically would be first in line to get hired at another airline, but 17,000 is a lot of people, and they are based in Florida, and people for the small town that is by the airport are already saying that this is going to be a huge economic blow for the community there.
I said last question, but you made me think of another. Hopefully that's okay. But what happens to the customers now? I mean, if you had a flight booked, whether it was on Sunday or you had one booked out from, you know, a couple months from now, what happens to you if you have Spirit Airlines money in the game, if you paid for a ticket?
Yeah, so Spirit, when they announced that they would be shutting down, did say that they are going to refund everyone who bought a ticket. Just speaking with the very few people who did show up to the airport when we were covering this over the weekend who didn't realize that Spirit was shut down, they didn't see any refunds into their account just yet. We know that that may take some time. But on the other hand, and that's if you booked with a debit or credit card. If you booked through a travel agent, that may be a little bit more complicated, and you're people should definitely go ahead and try and get moving on how to get their money back if that's the case. But on the flip side, other airlines such as United, Delta, JetBlue, and Southwest are agreeing to cap prices specifically for people who had Spirit tickets that were bought, meaning they wouldn't charge as much as they usually do if you do have the proof of that confirmation number of that Spirit flight. And then some airlines also are saying that they are going to be reducing fares, but that's only going to last for some airlines are only doing it for the next 72 hours. Some are doing it for up to 2 weeks. So for people who do have a flight booked and need to get somewhere and need to now go with another airline, if you want to pay the same price that you paid for the Spirit ticket, you probably should act fast.
Yeah, if you were on vacation and you're just somewhere, this is quite a difficult situation. You go, oh, I thought I had a flight home, and now I don't. Madison Scarpino, yeah. Fox News national correspondent, appreciate your time and your expertise today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And the one thing that I'm glad that Trump, he floated it. I almost wish he wouldn't have. I'm glad that he didn't go through with it, is bailing out this company. I saw Kevin O'Leary, you know, Mr. Wonderful or whatever he's called from Shark Tank on one of the Fox News shows this weekend talking about that very thing, that why would we get involved in bailouts? There are times when you're too big to fail, and even then, I question whether you actually are too big to fail. This is definitely not one of those times, though. This is an airline, and it sucks if your 17,000 people suddenly don't have a job, or, like we just said at the end, if you flew to Florida and you're on vacation and you go to the airport and you're ready to come home, that is a problem. And so that stuff needs to be addressed. It sounds like they are getting people refunds at least, so that's good. I said I was going to talk about Iran and gerrymandering. I haven't talked about gerrymandering yet. I'm going to give credit to a good colleague here, Brad Young. He is an attorney. He fills in on 97.1 and KMOX at times when we have some host who gets sick or is on vacation. And he filled in for Mark Reardon on Tuesday and made a fantastic point about redistricting and gerrymandering and the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court ruling that said that you can't draw districts now based on race like you used to, because that's racist. That case had never really been tried at the Supreme Court, and the first time they did it, they said, yeah, you can't do this, even though it's been going on for years. That's how the justice system works. They can't rule on something until somebody actually brings it to them. So now that you can't draw districts for the House based on people's skin color,
Democrats are crying foul and saying, well, that is going to create underrepresentation for people of color. And I refer back to my friend Brad Young here when he said that's malarkey or baloney. I can't remember the quote, but it was something like that. It is complete malarkey. And I can't believe nobody's brought this up before. That's why I'm referencing him to give him credit for bringing this up. That if everybody was worried about minorities having greater representation in Congress and not being diluted, which is the argument for race-based gerrymandering, then you would have seen different races other than African Americans or Black Americans, depending on which PC term you want to use now, with districts. But they wouldn't do that. Democrats would never do that. They would never draw a Latino-based district in any state, California, Florida, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. They would never draw a district that just benefited Latinos. Why? Because they didn't actually care about their representation. They would never do it for any other group either. I'm not sure there are other groups that would be big enough, but maybe in certain parts of the country, like Michigan, you would have a district that could be a majority of Middle Eastern Islam Muslims. Or maybe in certain parts of California, you might have a district that could be Asian predominantly, if not exclusively. But you've never, ever seen that happen anywhere, no matter what the politics are, no matter what the state makeup, and no matter what the race, other than Black. And you know the reason for that? It's because Democrats don't actually care about minority representation. They only care about consolidating it when it benefits Democrats. That is like the stupidest conclusion to come to, because you already know that. Like, everybody already knows this, but it has to be stated in a way that Brad Young was so good at doing and saying, why isn't anybody talking about this? Why isn't anybody talking about the fact that zero other races or minorities have ever had a district drawn for them other than Blacks in usually red states? Because they're just using it politically.
Wow. Wiggins America.
Okay, first of all, the Los Angeles mayoral debate has been something to behold. It is rare these days that a major candidate, and I would say in this race that's Mayor Karen Bass, who's the current mayor of Los Angeles, that they actually show up for a debate. But she did, which tells me one thing. She's not that far ahead. Spencer Pratt of Not the OC, we've said it this week, the OC was a scripted show. He was on, apparently, The Hills, I think I'm getting that right, this is all from memory, which was a reality TV show based the same way. Like, this is a California-based reality show. I didn't watch any of this stuff, so I'm just repeating this from looking it up. But anyway, Spencer Pratt is this guy, and he was a young heartthrob, and now he's probably the same age as I am, which is 44 or something like that. Maybe he's older than me, actually. I don't know. And he is running for L.A. mayor. And he is lighting bombs. But the thing is, they're all true. He's not just there to inflame the passions of the electorate. He's pointing out stuff that needs to be pointed out, because in a place like LA, it's so deep blue that nobody ever really pushes back on anything. So this is like the only way that you get somebody like an LA mayor to answer actual questions is in a debate. Here's a great moment when he was talking about the number of homeless people and how to handle the homeless in California.
Treatment first. I will go below the Harbor Freeway tomorrow with her, and we can find some of these people she's going to offer treatment for. She's going to get stabbed in the neck. These people do not want a bed. They want fentanyl or super meth. These ideas cost us over $400 million to house. For 70, what did you say? 3,000 people for $400 million? This is an absolute failure for both of them. They're a team.
The whole debate was like that. It was really good. He did a very, very good job. And his social media is lit. It's really good. I suggest following him if you like following political persons. Spencer Pratt, running for mayor of Los Angeles. Now, the reason that I bring this up is not just because it's been entertaining. And not just because, hey, if a Republican wins there, which is probably not likely, but the fact, again, that they're actually debating means that they have to make up some points and show up. That's good. It's not even the fact that you could have somebody rational run LA. It's that Karen Bass made a very, very particular point in that debate. I'm going to read to you this story from Fox News. It says, during a debate hosted by NBC4 and Telemundo, moderator Enrique Chiabra pressed candidates for a yes or no answer. Democrat Mayor Karen Bass, all about that bass. I think it's Bass. Have I been saying it wrong? Oh, no. Now I got to go back and check the tape. Declined to do so, while Republican challenger Spencer Pratt responded flatly, no. Let me make sure that you're catching what I'm saying here. The question was, should non-citizens be allowed to vote in local elections? Non-citizens of the country be allowed to vote in local elections. Now, it makes you wonder why we've had to fight so hard to get the SAVE Act passed in the U.S. Congress. This is not an isolated example. This actually has happened in municipalities across California. And it started to happen in New York, too. Surprise, surprise, it's the deepest blue places that were trying to get illegal aliens to be able to vote in our elections. What is the point? I mean, I say it, I can't even believe the words are coming out of my mouth. Getting illegal aliens to vote in our U.S. elections. This was happening. It was happening in multiple cities. I'm not sure that it happened in L.A. or not. I know they were talking about it. But it happened in multiple cities in New York. Different district courts shut them down. In New York, it was actually, I think, their own Supreme Court shut them down and said you cannot have. I mean, it is in the law that you have to be a citizen to vote in most of these places. So you go, well, why is the SAVE Act necessary? Well, because, of course, it's still happening, and the SAVE Act actually goes further to confirm whether or not you are a citizen at the moment of registration. And that's the key right there, is that it's not about the vote part, because that's probably going to happen anyway. If it's illegal, it's going to happen. It's about the registration, making it very, very difficult for an illegal immigrant to register to vote. You have to prove that you're a citizen at registration. That's the whole point. But I just can't believe that in a debate, the question was flat. Should non-citizens be allowed to vote in local elections? Mayor Karen Bass wouldn't answer. This is Wiggins America. Thank you for being here this weekend, and we will see you next time. Like the flower and the scent of summer, like the sun and the shine. Wiggins America. Well, the truth may come in strange disguises. Send the message to your mind.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
Since so many people are put off by the idea of bathroom attendants, why not just have a guy who stands in there and smiles at you?
The Grocery List, food for thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.